now for Inside Utah Politics with Lindsay Ayres.
Welcome on in today to IUP Plus. Appreciate you finding us, especially if you're streaming on News for Utah Plus. That's our free streaming app. Tell your friends about us, won't you? My guest panelist today, Taylor Morgan, Liam Murray. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hi.
It is good to be with us. With you, please introduce yourselves and tell us who you are.
Taylor Morgan. I'm a partner at Morgan May Public Affairs. We're a local political lobbying marketing firm.
And I'm Leah Murray, and professor of political science up at Weber State University.
And Taylor's motto is, as long as it's legal, it's fair. It's a little inside joke. We'll tell you later. All right. So I want to start with this today. By the way, producer Peter is out today, so we appreciate Laura subbing in here as our producer and pushing the buttons today.
Real quick, though.
Yeah.
Will Laura fact check us the way that Peter would fact check us?
It's up to Laura. If she wants to fact... Laura, if you want to...
I am, like... Not
I'm
going to
take.
Okay, so here's
the
thing.
Let's go. I'm going to take full advantage of Peter not being here.
Be aware, Laura. Yeah.
If we can convince Laura to care about what we're going to talk about, then we've done our job.
Have I ever said anything not factual on this program?
Laura, tell us. I'm not going to answer that. Laura, tell us what you know about Utah's redistricting case. What's going on?
I know that they voted in Map C, I believe.
Yeah.
And then they are arguing against it now.
Yeah, so the Republican Party.
Yes.
Yeah, is arguing against now. Mm-hmm. Do you know why?
I do not.
Okay. I don't think anyone does.
but that's interesting, right? Like, when we talk about conversation about it, if what Laura got from this is probably what most normal people who aren't nerdy like we are got from this, is it feels like the Democrats did a bait and switch. Or excuse me, the Republicans did a bait and switch,
or the Democrats. Or both.
But the Republicans did, because they basically said, this is what we want. And then right after they got what they wanted, then they... did all sorts of jumps to not have to have what they said they wanted.
Right. Okay, so for people who are catching up, the Utah Republican Party filed an initiative, and at first they filed an indirect initiative, which means they were going to go right to the legislature and say, do you want to repeal Prop 4? They've backtracked on that plan, and now they are just running a direct initiative, which is the normal initiative, you know, initiating a new law, which is why we're in this situation in the first place. So they're going to try to repeal Proposition 4. They got to gather about a little over 140,000 signatures before November 18th. Is that the right day? 17th, 18th, something like that.
15th.
15th?
I don't know. Nobody knows.
15th was the indirect. 18th is the direct. And that pauses Map C, and then we put it on the ballot in 2026. So that is where we stand right now. But the question is, Leah, you already spoke to this a little bit. What do you make of their pivoting? Like, why are they pivoting now? Why are they pivoting at the end of the court case? Like, we haven't talked since they pivoted. Pivot!
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah.
The sound effect.
Carry that
pivot
couch upstairs.
Yeah.
I mean, a little bit what I can't decide, and so maybe Taylor could speak better to this, is whether they were throwing, do you know what I mean? Like spaghetti at the wall to see what stuck, right? So it's like, which plan is going to be the best plan, you know, to make the change that we want, or maybe to have the districts that we currently have stay in place for the 2026 election. And a little bit, I wonder if they just weren't sure. You know what I mean? Like, what was the best play? So they just ran all of them at the same time? I don't
know. Taylor, strategy or spaghetti?
Well, obviously spaghetti. I think we should lower expectations and not expect the Utah Republican Party to be good at direct democracy, right? This is not something that they do. They haven't done it before. I think they are reacting in real time, trying to figure out what to do, how to do it. And a little bit, I'm not saying that what they're doing is great or smart or necessarily what I would advise that they do. However, I do want to say that they, every option available, every tactic that they can pursue to oppose the litigation by the plaintiffs in the overall lawsuit, I want to give, you know, them credit and say, why not? Why should they not be able to pursue every tactic, every arrow in their quiver, so to speak? I think it's fair game, really.
See, as long as it's legal, Taylor supports it.
But again, I'm not saying it's smart, or I'm not saying that it's the right tactic. I am saying if it's legal and if it's at their disposal, then why not?
Yeah, and the Republican Party has argued a lot that it's the judge that's created confusion. Do you guys agree with that, or do you think the Republican Party getting in here has created some of this confusion?
I think both. Absolutely, I do think the judge has created confusion. I think the judge... took 13 months to issue a ruling in this case, and that left very little time for the Utah legislature to respond. And so, yes, the Utah Republican Party has absolutely stepped in and added more confusion. But I think that's what they're trying to do. I think that's intentional. And again, if it's legal and if that tool is available to them, then I will defend their ability to use it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree with you, Taylor, except that at the end of the day, if someone like Laura is saying they wanted cake and then they complained about the cake, yeah, which is what it feels like it's coming out as, it's not enough to say, man, I can use all these arrows in my quiver all at the same time. If it starts to make the party look like it's flailing about, I'm not sure, right? It's not just like, is it legal? But it's also like, does it make sense to people? Can you explain it to people? What are the optics on that as we continue to have this conversation?
Well, let me just add this point.
Yeah.
I think what the party is doing, and I don't know that it is what they intended to do, but I will say it adds to, I think, their argument here or to their efficacy. And that is the fact that they are making direct democracy a complete and total mess. We have chaos right now. And I think unintentionally, the Utah Republican Party has clearly demonstrated how messy direct democracy can be, even their own version of direct democracy. And ultimately, in the end, maybe unintentionally, that helps them.
Yeah, and they've told me, you know, I've said to the chair of the GOP party, you know, you don't like initiatives, and here you are running initiatives. And he's like, well, that's what the court said we had to do. So that's what we're going to do. So that's where it stands at this point. And I do want to point out that what is likely to happen in this case now is we're waiting on one more hearing in Utah's redistricting case. This is a hearing over November 5th about whether the three tests that the GOP-controlled legislature passed to determine partisan fairness, whether those tests were cherry-picked, if you will. That's what the plaintiffs are claiming. In order to forever favor Republicans in these maps. Again, they made some of these arguments in the hearing, but we will have a specific hearing over those arguments. And then by November 10th, a judge has said she plans to issue a ruling so we can meet the Lieutenant Governor's deadline for getting ballots ready for 2026. But if the GOP's now direct initiative gets enough signatures by that November 18th deadline, then MAPC still could be paused, right? Am I getting this right?
I think legally, theoretically, that is correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
So MAPC could still be paused after the judge approves it. And then what map do we use? 2021, the current maps that we are sitting on, that map is enjoined. The judge has said you violated Prop 4. That map was created under an unconstitutional process. 2011's map, malapportioned. It doesn't have the same number of people in each district. The legislature has railed on the judge for wanting to pick a map. Can she do that?
Again, I think I said this last week. Nobody knows.
Right. And again, like a little bit, your point, Taylor, so well taken. You know, as the person who comes from a state where we don't do initiatives, a little bit, this just proves the founding fathers right. And that to a certain extent, it should be a republic. Right, direct democracy can be really problematic.
Interesting. Okay, so on this note of redistricting, we went in the weeds really quickly, and people apparently don't care about redistricting. No. I want to pull up these numbers from some polling that Deseret News and Hinckley Institute of Politics did jointly. They largely do a lot of polling here in Utah. And Laura, if you can pull up those numbers for us. Basically, they asked a couple of questions. The first question was, if Prop 4 were on the ballot today, which it could be in 2026 again, would you support it? You know, would you support that same anti-gerrymandering criterion commission that Prop 4 created? And about 44% said yes.
Yeah, but only 16% strong yes, right?
Yes, 16%
that's
strong yes. And then another significant number, 36%, said, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you make of those numbers, given the fact that the Republican Party is out there trying to repeal this?
I think a couple takeaways. Number one, when this issue first was put forward back in 2017, that 44% number support was 65% support. Then in 2018, we know Prop 4 passed on the ballot with 50.32%, I believe, just barely over a majority vote. So fast forward now today, with all the conversation politically here in Utah, all the attention on this issue, to only have 44% support, right, for the original Prop 4 language. But as you point out, most significantly, only 36% of Utah voters are even tracking this. I mean, wow, we spend so much time and energy tracking this and talking about it, and so few Utah voters are really tracking it at all.
Yeah, but Taylor, can I just say that the way that this question is worded, so if Prop 4, which created an independent commission, if we had a similar proposal, isn't it possible that some of the opposition might be because it didn't work, right? So if that original proposal was like, we're going to have an independent commission that actually has authority, which is not what we got, so maybe the opposition isn't so much to the commission, I don't know, right? Like, but it could be to whatever Prop 4 did cause this drama, right? And we need to revisit how we get a commission doing the work.
Well, and I think Prop 4 ultimately is, it has been exposed for what it always was. And I think a big part of this, problematically for the Prop 4 folks, is that their litigation, suing over the congressional maps only, has exposed their intentions and motivations from the very beginning, which is national Democrats, national progressive organizations trying to help add a seat in the U.S. House for the Democrats. That is what this has always been about from day one, and the litigation, I think, has laid that bare to voters here in Utah.
Interesting. All right, another question that they polled on, Laura, if you can pull up the second question here, was how much people are paying attention. Taylor, you mentioned this just a little bit, and basically only a third of Utahns, this polling says, are closely paying attention, if at all, to the redistricting process.
And how many headlines have we had?
Wah, which how makes much me feel so depressed because
Lindsay,
I'm like,
don't
how
get
long
discouraged.
Have we talked about it?
I work so hard to write these stories for you, to get you information.
But,
and it
but again,
seem to
focus
matter.
On the other side of this coin. Yeah. Focus on how many Utah voters are paying attention to this in a non-election, a.k.a. municipal election year.
Yep.
Now, no offense to all those groups and organizations, including our very own intern, Marina, who is working very hard to increase participation in and awareness of Utah's municipal elections. Despite all that work, unfortunately, Utahns are just not tracking politics and elections right now.
Yeah.
And so I would actually say to have this many folks paying attention on this issue right now is probably a good thing.
I love your
silver
lining,
focus on
Taylor.
The positive
okay.
here, not necessarily how few are tuning in.
The rose-colored glasses are very rosy today.
I'm just trying to help you out.
I appreciate you. Okay, before we leave this redistricting topic, there's one more thing that caught my attention this week with it, and that was a video put out by our Good House Speaker, Mike Schultz, who was complaining about this process. And I'm going to play a little clip of this video. He also uses the seal of the House of Representatives on it. Want to get your take on
Speaker
whether...
of the House.
Yeah. Whether that's an issue because he's
it's
kind of there's an issue with the blurring of the lines of politics and or you know taxpayer money, which represents all Utahns. So let's play a clip of that video, then you guys can react to it.
Article 9 of the Utah Constitution reads, "The legislature shall divide the state into congressional, legislative, and other districts accordingly." It could not be any clearer. The authority to draw the political boundaries resides within the legislature, which is elected by the people, not the judicial branch. Utahns deserve judges who interpret the law, not rewrite it.
There, the seal of the good House of Representatives of Utah. Taylor, we know your take. He's the speaker. Leah, what's your take on this?
I mean, I think... So not to agree with Taylor.
Whoa.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
You might agree with Taylor.
A little bit. I do think he's having a conversation with Utah, right, with the people of Utah about horizontal accountability, right, checks and balances. So his argument that he's making as part of the legislative branch, which is I think this is judicial overreach. I feel like it's clear in the Constitution who's supposed to be in charge of this. I think there's a soft argument in there that the initiative – like Prop 4 was wrong from the jump. Clearly this constitutional amendment, or excuse me, this constitutional line says this. And I don't know that I have an issue with it in front of the seal because he is operating as part of the legislature, right?
I guess what about those members of the House of Representatives? There are 14 Democrats, right, who disagree that the judge got it wrong in this case, who say that, you know, while the Utah Constitution says that the legislature shall divide the districts, they did divide the districts. And there's also a line in there that says the people have a right to reform their government via initiative, and the legislature can't overturn that unless it's narrow in scope and they have a compelling government reason.
What about them?
Go ahead, sorry.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, they could put out their own video speaking officially as the House minority.
They have a Speaker of the House.
Right, but the Speaker of the House. Right, he speaks for the majority of the House. Right? There's no question about that. Notice in that video, the backdrop was the House chamber. So he is speaking in an official capacity as Speaker of the Utah House of Representatives. He's doing that from the chamber of the Utah House, using the seal of the Utah House, and he is absolutely empowered to do that. There's no credible argument to make against him doing that because he's speaking in that official capacity. He, in fact, has a budget appropriated by the legislature to issue these kind of communications on behalf of the Utah House. I'm not saying that it is an effective video or that it is really getting across his point. What I am saying is there's no fiduciary problem with him doing this.
Okay.
Right. So it's maybe not legally problematic. I think the question Lindsay's asking is it, you know, with a gut check, does it feel okay?
Is it stylistically effective? Maybe not. I might wear a tie if I were speaker. But
if you're
that's
representing
not the
all taxpayers and you go out there and you're disparaging with the other branch of government.
Lindsay,
I'm just bringing up the question.
We elect via a majority. And if you win 50% of a vote in an election, then you are in the seat to represent that entire district, even if 49% of people did not vote for you. That's just how it works.
Yeah, and I also don't think in that capacity he's representing, like, all taxpayers. I actually read that as him representing the prerogative of the legislative branch. So while Democratic legislators might, they might like the new districts, but they might even agree that the legislative branch has prerogatives that the judiciary shouldn't be overstepping, right? Mm-hmm. So they might disagree with him on this issue, but I think he's making an institutional argument. I don't see it as a political argument.
Okay.
That's why I'm not sure I find it to be as problematic.
Okay. Let's not forget that many Democrats in the Utah legislature voted for the congressional maps, and almost all of them voted for the legislative maps in redistricting.
Yeah.
Right? Former House Minority Leader Brian King, now Utah Democratic Party chair, received an F grade from the Better Boundaries organization after that process. So, you know, Democrats have some questions to answer themselves.
Interesting. All right, well, we will leave that there. There will be more to talk about redistricting next week. Don't you worry.
Even if you're not interested.
Even if you don't give a crap.
Even if you're not following it all, we will force feed all of this info.
You will pay attention. But this is why I don't like it, is because it's like, this determines who we vote for. Why is this not important to people?
Oh, Lindsay, you're so cute. It's cute how much you care.
I'm going to stop caring. Then see where you get your information, folks. All right, let's move on, shall we? Finally, municipal elections are 1 week from today as we record this. And we've got a lot of cities here in Utah who've got some close elections. I want to talk, though, about a partisanship in these races. Our municipal elections are supposed to be nonpartisan, but that does not mean they're not without party influence. And so we saw some reporting this week from KUER talking about how a candidate in Provo, Mayor Michelle Cafusi, used and gave a donation to the Republican Party in exchange for their mail rate, their mass mailing rate, and some other things. So it's not so much like, is this appropriate? Because it is. It's more like, do you care? Do you care that these nonpartisan candidates are being endorsed by the party?
I'm wondering real quick, and so I'll just ask this question again. I grew up in a state where all the elections were partisan, including voting for the coroner, which I always tell my students, like, I'm not sure what the difference between
a Democratic coroner?
A Republican coroner? Right. I don't know.
Maybe the budget?
The kind of scalpel they use. Yeah. But anyway, so I'm very used to parties being up and down the ballot. I don't understand what the argument is to make municipal elections nonpartisan in the first place. So I
would rather have school boards nonpartisan than municipal
I think
elections.
That's fair.
And maybe a lot of people would. I don't know.
Right, because maybe agencies and a little bit school boards are kind of governing public agencies, and you kind of want parties maybe not in there. You wouldn't want as much politics in there. But I don't understand why a city council member. So anyway, what a political party does is gives a cue, right? So it tells a voter who's maybe not paying attention. I've been tracking Ricky Hatch up in Weber County. He's been listing voter turnout in the county. And I want to say it's like 9% across the county right now. Yeah. Like Taylor said earlier, not a lot of people are tracking municipal elections. Not a lot of information maybe about every single ballot. Right, every single person on those ballots in these small cities. So a little bit what the party should do is give a voter a cue, makes it a little easier for that voter to vote. So I am not sure it's a great idea to not have parties on the ballot in municipal elections in the first place.
Okay, but because we have nonpartisan, and we've set it up that way, what do you make of the parties being involved?
Well, I think Leah makes a really good point here. I think that not having municipal elections partisan elections actually depresses turnout a bit. One of the main reasons why people don't participate in municipal elections is because very little money is spent in those elections. There's not a lot of communications. Voters are not receiving as much, say, direct mail. They're not seeing ads on TV or hearing ads on radio. A lot of the advertising that does come into elections in partisan races comes from organizations or political parties, groups tied to political parties. It's a little bit of a ruse, right? Pretending that these elections are nonpartisan, trying to pretend that party politics aren't involved. Like Leah said, voters use party labels to identify candidates quickly who may share their values, right? Mm-hmm. Party labels, you know, we tend to think that political parties are inherently, you know, a negative. But political parties give voters, like Leah said, an important cue as to which candidates may share their values. And we see communications come from municipal candidates in nonpartisan elections. We still see partisan rhetoric coming from candidates, but yet by not allowing party labels, I think that contributes to lower voter turnout.
And the parties charge for this endorsement, right? At least the Republicans do.
That's a good question. I'm not sure how that works in municipal races.
The Republicans ask for a $50 endorsement fee, and then you get to use the party's, like, name and label. Is that appropriate? Mm.
That's a good question, Lindsay. This is news to me. Yeah. I know that
news.
In our
you
primary,
work in politics.
I do, but I don't do municipal races.
Okay.
Right. So this is news to me.
Okay.
In regular traditional primary elections, we know that the party uses its, nonprofit organization postage rate.
It endorses, though, right, Taylor, once a party candidate emerges. Right,
yeah,
we've heard
that's right.
Rob Axum talk about this. So they will endorse the convention candidate in a primary, right? And then they endorse whoever wins the primary in the general election.
Which I think is a real problem. I've complained in the past about the parties withholding their nonprofit postage rate from signature candidates. Mm-hmm. I think that's a problem, and I think we know that to qualify as a signature candidate from a party, you have to have X number of signatures of party voters, often far more signatures than delegate votes at convention. So I think the party wielding its non-profit postage rate is a real tool. I don't know that that's appropriate to use in a nonpartisan municipal election. That's a good question. I'm going to dig into that.
There we go. We shall see. Okay, our final minute here. Just give me any municipal races that you're watching. Anything that you got your eye on, you want to see how this shakes out, what's at stake here?
There's a hot mess that is great for tabloids happening in Riverton. not sure that it's worth your time to check that out, but if you're really, really bored and you want to follow municipal politics, then check out the drama happening in Riverton.
Okay.
Yeah, and I guess I'll just give a shout out for Ogden, where I live, because we've got three competitive seats. And your point's well taken. These are competitive seats. We should be voting. What happens at the municipal level actually is more important to your life than anything that's happening at the federal level. And a little bit, the ballot comes in without a party cue, and I've got two humans running against each other, and I like both of them very much. Yeah. So I literally, the ballot is sitting at my table, and I'm like, I don't know who I'm going to vote for.
Ooh, that's tough.
But it's, I would argue, whatever Taylor says, notwithstanding, how cool it is to have competitive races, right? This republic's built on elections. We need good people to run for office. I like seeing a ballot full of candidates that I do have choices. So even though I'm not sure what I'm doing, I'm happy about it.
Yeah. Interesting. All right, you guys, thanks for your insights today. And can I put out a plea to, like, pay attention, people?
Watch Inside Utah Politics.
Anyone who is watching this show
is paying attention.
Tell all your friends to watch it, too.
Share it with your friends. Post it online. We need more people like you.
please make my work mean something because I work really hard to get your information. And I'm going to stop killing myself to do it. All right. Appreciate you being here, even if you're not paying attention. We appreciate it. Taylor Morgan, Leah Murray, Laura, thanks for being here, too, and producing us. We appreciate it. And we will see you next time.